I couldn't be more excited about welcoming our guest expert for this mini-series, Cornelius N. Grove. Cornelius is the author of several books, including The Aptitude Myth, The Drive to Learn, A Mirror for Americans, and now, pursuant to our present conversation, his latest work, How Other Children Learn, What Five Traditional Societies Tell Us About Parenting and Children's Learning. And since the mission of Parentology is always to equip you, the parent, with the greatest capacity to be the greatest positive influence in your children's lives and parent them for the greatest success in their lives, I think this conversation will be particularly interesting because what Cornelius does that's so fascinating is look at what people in traditional, if not tribal, societies do with children that we've lost in contemporary culture, but nevertheless is a representation of considerable wisdom about how children can develop naturally and successfully as part of a society, as well as part of a family, as well as individually. I won't hold it off much longer, but our conversation today really gets into how tribal societies will include even very young children in work that's important to the family and to the tribe, such that that work doesn't feel like a chore, but instead feels like contribution. And in that process, I want you to hold in your mind this particular term that Cornelius emphasizes, which is communitarianism. So without further delay, here's expert advice for you from Cornelius N. Grove, from his book, How Other Children Learn. Cornelius, welcome to Parentology. Thank you so much for joining me on the podcast. It is a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you, Steve. Happy to be back. Happy to be included. Thank you.
So what is our topic for your first episode with us here?
I would like to discuss, for the benefit, I hope, of American parents, the problem or challenge of getting children to accept responsibility for completing chores.
I love it, because I think that's something that so many parents struggle with in terms of how to build a framework in the household for accomplishing that. I know some kids are paid to do chores, or they're given a stipend, or that sometimes it's just a struggle. So I think this is something that so many parents are going to find very useful. So with that said, let me turn it over to you and start leading us down this path. What is the answer to that?
Well, before we get to the answer, let me give you some examples, because this insight that I've had is research generated, not my own personal research. I have been a parent. My kids are long, long out of the house. They're all in their 40s. So, you know, I'm beyond that.
So you don't really have to get them to do too many chores at the house anymore.
Not too many. So I've just finished a book. The book is named How Other Children Learn. Subtitle is What Five Traditional Societies Tell Us About Parenting and Children's Learning. So in this book, I look at five traditional societies. The five societies are the Akka hunter-gatherers of Central Africa, the Quechua Highlanders of Peru, the Navajos of our own Southwest here in the United States, the village Arabs of the Levant, and the Hindu villagers of India. And as I get near the end of this book, I also have I draw more broadly from anthropological research into traditional societies. And what becomes evident in many traditional societies, and there are exceptions, is that at a very young age, children are willingly and even enthusiastically accepting responsibilities. Let me give you a few examples. Actually, the first two or three are going to be from Quechua society in Peru. They live at incredibly high altitudes. This first little story I'm going to tell you occurred at 16,400 feet. And the anthropologist wrote as follows. When I met three-year-old Annali in her home, it was her first meeting with a foreigner. While her parents were busy preparing a meal, Annalie took over the role of hostess. She filled two cups with water, kept one for herself, and offered one to me, saying, "Let's drink together," in Quechua. She cared for me in an elegant and quite determined way throughout my stay in her home. Now, this girl was 3 years old at the time. She took responsibility. The anthropologist doesn't say if her parents asked her to do this, but even if they did, she did it, and she did it well. Same anthropologist describes a boy of five. Again, Quechua. It's a different anthropologist, but it is the Quechua. Felipe, 5 years old, joined his mother or his older brother on their visits to the hills around the community to graze the flock or work the farmland. He helped at home with cooking, washing, feeding the animals, and fetching water and wood. During the following year, he not only expanded these activities, but also became closer to his father, helping on the farm and using a miniature tool, a scythe that his father had made especially for him. When questioned, he said he really liked to do these things. 5 years old, 6 years old.
Let me interrupt you there, because we obviously want to talk about how is this achieved in societies. But I think one thing that you're tapping into that I'm aware of from other research, and you alluded to it earlier, there's an age at which, as kids are maturing and when they're still very young, that they actually want more than just about anything else to be part of the family, to be productive members of the family and the society. And I think that's something that you're alluding to here, right? That they're tapping into that.
And there's actually research carried out here in the United States, which I'll tell you about a little later, that makes this point exactly, looking at very young children. But let me not jump there. I would like to give at least one more example here. Now, let's get, we'll go to the Navajo now in our own Southwest. And here where I read about a young woman named Gray Girl, G-R-E-Y, Gray Girl. She was 14 years old at the time. And a big event for the Navajos is shearing the sheep. And they need, so all the Navajos men, and I'm confident some women also, are busy shearing the sheep and dealing with all of that. And they need somebody to make them a big meal. So Gray Girl was assigned, or maybe she even volunteered, to make this meal, to deal with this meal. She had assembled her pots and pans around the glowing coals, and one boiled a goat stew to which corn had been added. Pots of hot water stood ready for coffee. She had mixed a pan of thoroughly kneaded dough from which she had already shaped tortillas. Watching each tortilla in the pan, she turned it with a skillful flip, and so forth and so on. A pile of tortillas was ready when the family began returning. 14 years old. Yes, what seems to be true, Steve, is that two things stand out when you read in account after account in traditional societies. Again, there are exceptions. One is that expectations by parents and grandparents and aunts and uncles, often these people all live, you know, sort of together or nearby one another, expectations of very young children that they will contribute somehow in very small ways begins as soon as they can walk. As soon as they're steady walking, they run little errands. They learn to start the fire. They learn to boil the water. They learn to shake out the bedding in the morning, and on and on. And these are children who can scarcely walk, are learning to walk, are making progress in that direction. And yes, they do seem to want to assist. They want to be a part of the family. These are the people they see all the time. They're taking care of them. They're showing them love. And they want to be a part, a recognized part, an active part of the family. This is at a very young age. I don't think we're giving an idea here that they're thinking in somehow just so many words, gosh, I want to be a part of this family. What should I do? It's just, I don't think it's that way. They don't think like that yet, but they, you know.
It's a natural inclination on their part to want to do that.
A natural inclination, a natural motivation. So that's one thing. And the other is that these families are, the value system that drives these families is quite different from the value system that drives most American families. Most American families are driven by a strongly individualistic ethic. But in traditional cultures, the ethic of families is much more likely to be what I call communitarian. And I would say that the best short description I've come up of a communitarian value system in a family or any group actually is just this very short sentence. What I want is what we need.
I love that. Repeat that again for our listeners. That's great.
What I want is what we need.
And so is that the lesson here for, or at least one of them in this, for American families or families around the world who are listening to this podcast? Obviously, many of whom, or the majority of whom, don't come and are not part of these more traditional cultures that you're identifying. But is the lesson, therefore, that we want to have a family culture and cultivate an attitude and ethos in our family around the idea that everyone needs to do what's good for the family, not what's good for the individual?
Exactly. And this is not something that for most American families comes really easily. We are steeped in an individualistic value system. And what tends to happen, I believe, in a great many American families is that children in modern societies, certainly in American society and American middle-class society, children actually have nothing to do. Whereas in traditional societies, children have something to do. Their labor is needed. And one of the things that comes out of this research, which again, I've put into as short a statement as I possibly could, is that in traditional society, the practical benefits of the parent-child relationship, the practical benefits flow from the children to the parents. The children support the parents. In other words, they support the family, and the parents are the older ones. They're sort of arranging things, and the children support that. And when they get old enough, which could be 5, 6, 7 years old, they contribute to that by their labor. And later on, much later on, when they're adults and their parents are getting into their old age and are not laboring so much anymore and are getting infirm, then the children are needed to take care of the parents. All of this we've done a pretty good job of eliminating in many American families. Well, let me tell you about this research. Getting back to little children, there was a research done in 1982 in which not an anthropologist, but I think a developmental psychologist named Harriet Rheingold studied 80 children. Some of them were 18 months old, some of them were 24 months old, and some of them were 30 months old. And she had, quote unquote, a laboratory, which was a few rooms that were set up to simulate a home environment. And there were 9 typical household tasks, including a table that needed to be set, a basket of laundry, and so forth and so on. And parents and children, one at a time, were admitted to the room and given a number of minutes, not as a time, not as a competition, but the parents understood that the idea was that they would do some of these tasks and not necessarily ask the children to help them. Or maybe they, I don't remember, maybe they sort of asked them. But the children were very young. I think this is the important thing. What was found out that is of the 18-month-old children, 63% helped on half or more of the tasks. Of the 24-month-old children, 78% helped on half or more of the tasks. And of the 30-month children, that's just 2.5 years, 89% helped many of the tasks. And they did this very willingly. I mean, you know, all of this was videotaped and gone over endlessly by researchers. And the kids were having fun. They were enthusiastic about it. And sometimes the most amazing thing is the kids did things that the parents haven't thought of. For example, one of the things they ended up doing in many cases was setting a table. But there weren't any chairs around the table. And the parent, in some cases, didn't think that chairs weren't around the table. But these young kids went and got the chairs and brought them and put them around the table. So they took initiative. I remind you, these are not traditional children. These are American children at very young age.
Let's emphasize that point for everybody here, that what the research is revealing to us is that children have a natural inclination to want to help.
At a very young age.
So one of the things, tell me if this is on track, it seems on track with what you're saying, My son has always been involved in doing things within the family in terms of, you know, whatever needs to be done around as age appropriate that he could do and so forth. But as he got older, he sometimes said, you know, I don't feel like doing that, or do I have to do it now? And we always said, listen, when we're driving you to school or driving you to be with a friend or doing something for you, we're doing it because we're vested in your success and happiness, and that makes our family better. And we expect the same thing in return, right? That you have to be invested in us as well in the family. You're not, shouldn't expect to get anything for helping us out, because we are all vested in each other's success. That's what it is to be a family.
Right.
Is that sort of the right mindset to cultivate with our kids based on what your research is saying?
What you find in traditional families is that these sorts of thoughtful discussions don't need to take place.
But help the parents who are in our society here listening to this podcast, help them translate it.
Well, anything you can do by word or deed, to emphasize a communitarian mindset on everyone's part, that this is what drives the family, this is the ethos, you probably wouldn't use that word, but the kid, but, you know, the ethos of the family. What I personally want is what we as a group need. Probably better demonstrated consistently than discussed, but let's face it, folks, our difficulty is that we are immersed in a highly individualistic value system. It's all around us. We're deeply immersed in it. And for a family to be really communitarian, an American family to maintain a communitarian mindset, is somewhat countercultural. I'm not saying they can't do it. People do it. One of the things I came to as I was doing this book, thanks to my, well, some of my own experience and my editor, is that we have in this country a group of families that rather routinely has a communitarian mindset and involves children from a young age. And that is farm families where animals are being raised. Chickens, got to go get the eggs, you know, got to feed the chickens, the cows, ducks, you know, pigs, so forth. There are things to do. And children, my own experience of spending summers on a farm as I was growing up, and my editor grew up on a farm. She was a farm girl in upstate New York. You know, these kids just learn to pitch in. I mean, you know, hey, it's not all that hard. It's enjoyable. You're part of the group. So this is what it really comes down to. You need to start early, and you need to have a communitarian mindset for the family. The explanation you gave to your son is certainly a communitarian type of explanation, no doubt about it. I guess it worked.
It seems to be working. He's usually quite eager to help and understands that it's valuable to us and that it's part of what we do together as a family, is help one another. And I guess that brings me to the question for the listeners who haven't started early. They missed the window and they have an 8-year-old, a 12-year-old, a teenager in their home or several and haven't yet established that communitarian culture. I understand, of course, that it's going to be more challenging for them to go back and try to retrofit that and change their family culture. But what would be your best advice for them in trying to make that turn at this point?
I guess my advice would be you probably won't get anywhere if it's only talk.
Unpack that a little for them.
To go into an explanation like this after a child has been emerged for 8 years, 10 years, in a what I want is what I expect. I ask, I get what I want. I'm happy because I have things that are provided for me. If in the middle of all that, you start offering communitarian messages, it runs counter to, and I'm not saying that the kid consciously, rationally notices, you know, the disconnect between what you're saying and what you're doing. But I do think at a deeper level, I'm hoping that somehow deeds are shifted along with all these nice words about, you know, the good of the group and kind of thing that you talked about.
So the takeaway then is for parents, start modeling that behavior. Even when we haven't instilled it from the earliest age, we might have done so. starting now as parents, let's start modeling that kind of behavior and attitude for our children, as well as expecting it of them, no matter what age they are. And that might be a process to get us around that bend, but maybe we eventually get there.
Yes.
All right. Well, thank you so much for sharing that on this episode of Parentology.
My pleasure.
We'll be back soon.